Psychotronic weaponry, characterized by its aim to influence or control human cognitive processes, stands at the cutting edge of both technological innovation and ethical debate. This form of warfare departs from conventional arms to embrace a realm where consciousness, thought, and perception becomes the battleground. As we traverse the 21st century, the potential for such technology to redefine global conflicts and challenge existing socio-political paradigms becomes a compelling focal point for inquiry. This film explores the historical evolution, scientific underpinnings, technological advancements, and ethical concerns surrounding psychotronic weaponry. Join me, Josh Reeves, for my 69th documentary film, Psychotronic Weaponry, The War on the Mind. The idea of manipulating the human mind using external stimuli dates back centuries, often rooted in mysticism or a rudimentary form of psychology. However, it was not until the 20th century that the potential for systematic mind control began to be seriously explored by scientific and military communities. During the Cold War, superpowers invested in understanding and harnessing psychotronics. The Soviet Union reportedly conducted experiments on the effects of electromagnetic pulses on human mental states. In parallel, the United States explored these avenues under projects like MKUltra, which infamously investigated the use of drugs and psychological techniques to control behavior. The declassification of certain projects like MKUltra in the 1970s brought public awareness to the potential of psychotronic techniques. Academic circles began to investigate the ethics and science of such technologies, laying the groundwork for today's research.
I mean, I woke up in the middle of the night with an incredible case of vertigo. You know, the room was spinning. I wanted to throw up.
Mark Polymeropoulos, a former U.S. intelligence officer at the CIA, was hit in 2017 by an invisible attack in a Moscow hotel.
I'd been in places like, you know, Iraq and Afghanistan. I'd been shot at, but this was by far the most terrifying experience of my life.
It's a mystery that's plagued the U.S. intelligence community and the State Department for years, an attack which brain experts now say was likely the result of a microwave weapon hitting American personnel in Cuba, China, Russia, and other places around the globe. The U.S. government has not identified the perpetrator, but current and former U.S. officials believe Russia is to blame. The Russian government did not respond to CNN's request for comment. The attack impacted his balance, sight, and hearing. The pain has never wholly subsided.
I couldn't, you know, make it through the day, not even close. I've had a headache every day since that night in Moscow. It's never gone away, day and night.
He had to retire early, and for a dedicated CIA officer who spent his entire career fighting terrorists in the Middle East, it hasn't been easy to accept that an invisible strike took him out of the game.
I rather would have been shot. This was a silent wound. You know,
You would have rather been shot?
Absolutely.
Why?
Well, I mean, it's something that I could have shown people. I had a really hard time initially at the agency because people didn't necessarily, the senior medical staff didn't necessarily believe me.
Polymeropoulos had to fight to get expert health care. Just this month, he finished specialized treatment at Walter Reed Medical Center, more than 3 years after that traumatic night in Moscow.
When they provided me the piece of paper with the diagnosis that said I had a traumatic brain injury, you know, I had tears in my eyes.
Some 40 U.S. government officials have experienced symptoms similar to his. In 2017, the U.S. embassy in Cuba slashed its staff because the attacks were so pervasive. A newly declassified State Department report points to systemic disorganization when the department began handling this crisis during the Trump administration. New Hampshire Senator Jeanne Shaheen has been fighting to get the victims medical assistance and answers about who did this.
If we don't hold those responsible accountable, then we can be sure it's going to continue to happen. And that's a national security risk to the United States and to our personnel.
According to U.S. intelligence documents obtained by CNN, Russia has been developing this microwave attack capability for decades. Today, Bill Burns, President Biden's nominee to lead the CIA, telling Congress,
I will have no higher priority than taking care of people, of colleagues and their families. I will make it an extraordinarily high priority to get to the bottom of who's responsible for the attacks.
Paul Maropoulos created a Superman mask in art therapy, thrusting a dagger through Superman's skull to represent the headaches which have changed him. The CIA agency seal cracked. His family was emotional when he showed them his project.
My son and my daughter both said to me, you know, Dad, you're still my Superman.
Before the attack happened, how would you describe your relationship with the agency in, you know, one or two words?
It's a love affair.
And after?
A divorce. With perhaps some reconciliation in the future, I would hope.
Now, Jake, I have just learned from a U.S. official that the CIA has set up its first ever task force in recent months to handle these suspected microwave attacks. And the official explains to me that they are going to use the breadth of resources at the CIA. And this process is going to ensure that there is a team and process in place to address any future incidents. We should also note that the CIA spokesperson, Timothy Barrett, said the agency's top priority has been and continues to be the well-being of their folks who are out in their field, of the intelligence officers. But this is something that we are going to stay on because this truly needs to be a whole-of-government approach if the process is going to work here and if those who are hit are going to get what they need.
Understanding brain function is pivotal to psychotronic research. Neurons communicate through electrical signals, producing measurable brainwave patterns. Alpha, relaxed. Beta, alert. Theta, drowsy. And delta, deep sleep. Altering these patterns through electromagnetic fields impacts mental states. Studies have demonstrated that certain electromagnetic frequencies can influence neurological functions. Experiments with extremely low frequency or ELF waves indicates potential for these fields to affect cellular processes, including neuron activity, leading to cognitive changes. In addition to electromagnetic frequencies, sound waves have shown efficacy in affecting mental states. Sonic weapons, for instance, leverage infrasonic or ultrasonic frequencies to cause discomfort or disorientation, demonstrating potential applications in psychotronic strategies. Directed energy weapons employ concentrated electromagnetic waves. Microwave or laser technology to disrupt electronic equipment or induce discomfort in human targets. The potential for psychotronic application lies in modulating these emissions to affect neural functions subtly.
China is reportedly looking for a way to teach soldiers to operate weapons with just their minds. Fox News national security correspondent Jennifer Griffin has that story.
It would be literally like putting a device into your brain that can launch a missile. It sounds like a sci-fi thriller. New intelligence shows China is using technologies like gene editing and brain-machine interfaces to enhance military capabilities and control its own people. Machines that could allow a Chinese commando to discharge a weapon with just a thought, not a trigger finger.
That's what they mean by brain control technology. It's like a new field.
This month, the Biden administration targeted the emerging threat by levying sanctions on 37 Chinese biotechnology companies that have ties to this research that experts say include so-called mind control weapons. Former DNI John Ratcliffe warns against the U.S. trying to keep up with China's unscrupulous efforts.
We're not going to place our own soldiers, sailors, and airmen at risk, which is what the intelligence tells us the Chinese are willing to do. They want to advance at any cost, including those that are harmful to their own population.
The U.S. has no scruples about smearing China by every means.
The Pentagon says Beijing already uses these technologies, including biometric surveillance tools and facial recognition, to track dissidents and journalists and to suppress the Uyghurs.
Broadly speaking, we see that China and their military continues to develop advanced technologies and capabilities, which are clearly designed to reinforce their very coercive, very aggressive behavior.
Republican lawmakers have called on Commerce Secretary Gina Raimondo, whose department levied the latest sanctions against dozens of Chinese biotech companies, to do more. Senator Marco Rubio has proposed a bill to restrict U.S. investment in more Chinese military companies, companies that may one day produce mind control weapons. At the Pentagon, Jennifer Griffin, Fox News.
Brain-computer interfaces allow direct communication between a brain and external devices. Initially developed for medical purposes, such as aiding individuals with motor impairments, BCIs present dual-use potential for psychotronics, enabling remote influence over cognitive processes. Subliminal messaging uses stimuli below the threshold of conscious perception to influence cognition. Coupled with data analytics and behavioral sciences, this technology can enhance the subtlety and efficacy of cognitive persuasion, an essential aspect of psychotronic weaponry. Machine learning and neural networks enhance the ability to map and predict brain activity accurately. These technologies provide the foundation for developing psychotronic systems capable of personalizing influence measures based on individual neural profiles. Technologies like transcranial magnetic stimulation and transcranial direct current stimulation have shown promise in modulating neural activity non-invasively, highlighting potential pathways for psychotronic applications. In other words, mind control you don't feel or even know is happening to you. In military contexts, the offensive and defensive applications of psychotronics could transform engagements. Technologies could incapacitate or manipulate enemy forces without traditional violence, fundamentally altering conflict strategies. Psychotronic technologies play a role in intelligence gathering and counterintelligence, such as extracting information from subjects or dissuading espionage threats through cognitive disorientation. Domestically, law enforcement might employ psychotronics for crowd control and hostage situations, using non-lethal methods to manage public order without physical confrontation. government and corporate actors utilize these technologies for societal management, influencing mass behaviors to predict or stifle dissent, raising ethical questions about autonomy and freedom. And it's my belief that if we live in a world where psychotronic weapons are being used against us, against our will and without our knowledge, autonomy and freedom are out the window.
You're not going to feel it.
It felt like opening up an oven door, almost mixed with a sting from about my sternum to my neck. So like you started really feeling it on my neck before I had to kind of instinctively jump out of the way.
Yep. It still works the same way.
Picture like an invisible searchlight. Right, you know what a searchlight looks like? So an invisible searchlight of radio waves going downrange. So it's this big when it starts, and at the end, it's the same size.
This is a military area. Move away from the perimeter. I say again, this is a military area. Move away from the perimeter.
There could be some perimeter incursions along an installation that you may have. There could be some crowd control. Where you're trying to make sure that you de-escalate the situation and kind of calm things down and break up these crowds before it gets out of control.
Inside the Story with 60 Minutes producers Michael Ray and Oriana Zil de Granados.
Ori, Michael, you were the lead producers on this week's 60 Minutes Story about U.S. diplomats who say they were attacked by a mysterious weapon that left them with brain injuries. Mm-hmm. How long have you guys been reporting this story?
I would say it's been about a year, maybe a little bit longer. We were attracted by the fact that this was a mystery that hasn't been solved. And the people who were actually victimized here had never been heard from directly. Their voices were missing in the story. So we set out to really talk to them.
So tell me, how are you feeling right now?
I'm not feeling well, not at all. I'm nauseous, dizzy, I have a headache. My equilibrium is a bit off.
Strong nausea and headache and dizziness.
You have trouble retrieving words?
I do. Yeah, significant trouble.
So debilitating that it feels like your head is being split open. So debilitating that I couldn't sleep. I was thinking, what is wrong with me? Something's wrong.
How did the story change for you once you heard it from the people who experienced it?
It went from being a sort of James Bond spy thriller to being actual victims. People who were really hurt, children who were hurt. That's some of the reporting that was most interesting to us, is we didn't realize how many children of diplomats were affected by this.
You believe that someone in the room above you was using some kind of a weapon to attack your family in the hotel room below.
I do.
And that they specifically targeted your children in their beds.
Yes, I do.
And could there be a cause that none of us have even considered yet?
Yes.
Sure.
Absolutely.
You're reporting on something that's invisible. Were there moments where you had doubts about what you were hearing?
Yeah, I mean, frankly, we've been doubting the story from day one, and that's part of our job. But on this story, with so many unknowns and so many questions unanswered, and just the bizarre nature of what's happened here, it was a daily occurrence. So we've been incredibly careful to check everything we can and to try to be clear with the audience about what we don't know.
What does the badge signify?
This is my Diplomatic Security Service badge.
These are State Department and Commerce Department officials.
Put your hands on your hips, mm-hmm. and close your eyes.
And their stories are incredibly compelling. And their medical records are incredibly compelling.
In your story, you refer to these people as victims. Is it possible that they're victims of their own imaginations? Has that been raised?
So there was some reporting that was done that claimed that this was mass hysteria, There are a lot of elements here that just discount the idea of this being mass hysteria. A dog can't get sick because he thinks somebody else is getting sick.
There were nonverbal children having symptoms as well who aren't going to look around and...
They're not susceptible to mass hysteria.
You'd think.
Children and dogs.
Exactly.
The State Department sponsored treatment at the University of Pennsylvania, and they were all there in and out for the same period of time. Our understanding is that in the waiting room, they started calling each other themselves the Tinfoil Hat Club.
The Tinfoil Hat Club. What's the meaning of that? What's the joke?
It's the old trope of sort of the crazy guy who puts tinfoil on his head so the aliens can't beam, you know, messages into his brain. It's a gallows humor. These folks are really trying to grapple with what they're dealing with.
Everyone in your broadcast story says that they were attacked while they were serving in China, but you also spoke with people who were attacked in Cuba, including one woman who speaks on camera, and she's wearing a disguise.
You have asked us not to use your name. Why is that?
This isn't something that any of us really want to be known for.
She is the first victim from Cuba, a diplomat, to go on camera to tell her story.
There was an amazing pressure in my head, also pain, and it was almost paralyzing for a moment. I don't know if that
the way she describes the attack is very important because it matches so closely to some of the other stories we've heard.
And then you start, it starts looking like a pattern.
Yeah, correct. There's definitely a pattern.
You've been concerned about keeping your identity out of this. So I wonder, why did you sit down to speak with us at all?
I really want our story to be told. I want America to know what happened to their diplomats serving overseas. And I want people who were injured in these events to come forward if they haven't come forward before, because treatment does help with the symptoms, and it's not something that you should have to live with and suffer through alone. So it's important for everyone to hear this.
The societal implications of psychotronic weapons extend beyond immediate military applications and threaten to redefine privacy, challenge notions of free will, and evoke significant psychological impacts if and when they are misused. Ensuring that individuals have control over their cognitive environments is critical. Legal frameworks must address consent and privacy, particularly in distinguishing lawful research and applications from coercive or non-consensual uses, which anybody that knows anything about what these people do, you know that's what they want to use it for. Continued advancements in psychotronics depend on interdisciplinary efforts combining neuroscience, computer science, ethics, and international law to navigate the complex landscapes of mind-influencing technologies. Raising awareness and fostering public dialogue on psychotronic technologies are essential for democracy and informed policymaking. Understanding potential threats and governmental efforts to manage these technologies is essential. Developing technological solutions to safeguard against abusive psychotronic applications is critical. These might include countermeasures and detection systems to protect individuals from unwanted interventions. But at this stage in the game, as far as I know, those are just theoretical. Psychotronic weaponry represents a shift in the paradigm of conflict and control. As these technologies evolve, the international community has to grapple with the challenges they present and try and make sure that it will fall into the hands of vicious psychopaths. One can only hope. Thank you for watching.
It started with a weird, piercing sound.
It was persistent.
High-pitched.
High-pitched sound.
Very, very loud.
Those who heard it told newspapers it was soon followed by
strong nausea.
An incredible case of vertigo.
Dizziness.
Excruciating headaches.
These mysterious afflictions were first reported in the Cuban capital in 2016. And they were thus called
Havana Syndrome.
Havana Syndrome.
Havana Syndrome.
Since then, more cases have been reported in China, Vienna, and now also Berlin. The symptoms were described as
an invisible injury.
Many victims reported brain damage without ever sustaining a concussion. What's even stranger is that of about 200 reported cases, nearly half involved CIA agents. That's why these incidents started to look a lot like
sonic attacks.
Attack of unknown nature.
With a mysterious invisible weapon.
Conjectures abounded. The investigations that followed focused on sonic weapons, energy devices, and secret microwave beams. But while speculation like this bends the limits of what's physically possible, some scientists are putting forward a rather unremarkable explanation that has been remarkably overlooked.
The line of demarcation in the Cold War lies in Berlin.
Berlin has long been a city of spies. During the Cold War, it was the closest contact point between the East and the West, a city where Soviets and NATO powers were constantly spying on each other from the other side of the Berlin Wall.
The wall.
Today, some experts think the city could once again become a hotbed of espionage. And they point to a familiar suspect. Russia. Berlin recently reported two cases of Havana Syndrome. Both victims were US officers working on cases linked to Russia. One on the controversial Nord Stream 2 pipeline, the other one on Russian cyber attacks. But why would anyone think Russians are using microwave beams? Well, maybe because they've done it before. From 1953 to 1976, Russia bathed the US embassy in Moscow with microwaves. US intelligence called it the Moscow signal. Microwaves have also already been used as a weapon. The so-called active denial system developed by the US uses wave energy to disperse crowds. You might have seen clips of drones taken down using similar technology. Oh, and remember that ticking sound? Microwaves can produce audible clicks too. This is called the Frey effect. If you put it all together, the image of Russian spies using new energy weapons seems pretty plausible, right?
We could speculate about little green men, you know, throwing lightning bolts down at these people. My name is Kenneth Foster, F-O-S-T-E-R. I'm a professor emeritus at the University of Pennsylvania in biomedical engineering. I have, well, maybe at this point, a 50-year interest in the subject, as well as having done some of the original research on this effect. You have to have evidence to draw conclusions, and there was none.
The first problem is that a microwave weapon would be difficult to hide.
No, you're talking about something the size of a big shipping container. The antennas are probably 3 meters across.
The beam would also leave clear evidence.
It would cause major interference problems, and it's hard to focus the energy in a small beam, and the field strength is so large that it would burn out Wi-Fi sets and reset computers.
Oh, and that strange sound? A declassified investigation suggests it was likely Caribbean crickets. As this theory loses credibility, some scientists are asking us to consider one that's even more uncomfortable.
Functional disorders are incredibly common, actually. They're the second commonest reason to see a neurologist and the commonest reason to see a gastroenterologist, and yet it's incredibly hidden.
Enter John Stone, one of 38 prominent neurologists, psychologists, and psychiatrists who wrote an open letter suggesting that these symptoms could be best explained as a kind of functional disorder. Harvard Medical School defines them as a condition with symptoms that no physical examination or testing can explain. The condition is considered to be a mental disorder, but it results in very real physical ailments.
So, for example, irritable bowel syndrome or fibromyalgia and many other forms of chronic pain are types of functional disorder. They do have their basis in the body. They're not just all in the mind that these things are actually happening.
Given the lack of clarity over how functional disorders arise, patients often encounter skepticism when talking about them. At times, they have been described as a form of hysteria, compounding stigmas around them.
There is that characterization of functional disorders as, you know, these are conditions affected by work-shy people or people with mental illness. It's just not the case.
Anyone can be affected by a functional disorder, including CIA agents. Dizziness, headaches, nausea are all typical symptoms of functional disorders.
When I read about these patients, I thought, well, these are patients that are typical of patients I would see on a Monday morning in my clinic.
But the similarities don't stop here.
Nearly all types of brain injury are worst at the beginning, because that's when the brain's just been injured, and then slowly improve over time.
But with the Havana syndrome, symptoms typically worsen over time.
What we see in functional disorders is very often that. Patients have a minor physical event, it does give them symptoms, but then it sets in train a set of symptoms which kind of worsen each other. So you have dizziness, and then you can't sleep, and the more you can't sleep, the more tired you get, and then other symptoms come along.
Exceptional stress can also trigger these disorders.
If your boss at work tells you there might be a sonic weapon around, then you might start to interpret things that are actually perhaps normal initially as a problem.
The jury is still out on what caused these symptoms. Other experts disagree that they were caused by functional disorders. Perhaps it was a combination of factors. Perhaps something completely different.
I've not met these patients, and it's really important that I'm not sitting here saying I know what's wrong with these people, because that's not good medicine.
What's certain is that the pain these people are going through is very real. The distinction between psychological and physical pain, much less so.
These are common, disabling, distressing conditions that can affect anybody, you know, from any walk of life. And why is it that we are dismissing them with incredibly stereotyped and stigmatized views? That doesn't make any sense to me. We should be considering them seriously. And thinking about more ordinary explanations for illnesses, perhaps before extraordinary ones.